Listen, we went through this Easter thing together. Remember that? Ever since Easter, we've been asking the question this month, now what? Right? Now what? We witness or we hear this story about this man who comes to earth. He claims that he's been sent by God specifically to redeem all of mankind. And it's according with the scriptures that were given to us through different men that God spoke through at different times, all through history of the Jewish people. And he comes and he teaches what we need to be doing, and he tells us ahead of time, I'm not going to be here forever. I'm going to be here a time. I'm going to have to die. And he predicts his own death and the manner of it. And then he dies. And then we are told that he is resurrected. So some people believe this and some people don't. And the question for us, if you do believe it, is, well, now what? And what we're asking people to do is to look at this through what I call the fresh eyes. You know what the fresh eyes are? You know, as though you didn't have all of the background that you currently have, as though it was just brand new to you. Okay, Jesus died for my sins, was resurrected on the third day, boom, comes back. Now what? Okay, so that's what we're asking you to do. We're asking you, regardless of what your religious background or experience has been so far, okay, for the next 30 minutes, just sort of pretend that somehow that doesn't exist and that this is just you being an ordinary human being and shwoomp, this gospel thing is dropped in your lap. Now what do you do with it? That's the question we've been asking. And so actually, I think you're going to like this, and I hope that you come next week for the last part of it. Even if you are not so sure if you believe in the Jesus thing yet, okay, even if you're not sure, you will still like this. I actually think you're going to like this. In fact, today I especially think you're going to like this. There's going to be somebody in the back of the church somewhere that, you know, maybe your auntie dragged you, or maybe, you know, you came because, well, maybe there's some girls there. I hear there are nice girls at church. Yeah, some of you have confessed that to me at different times. Maybe your wife made you came. I don't know. Whatever it is. And you came here, and you're kind of like, you know, you got the arms crossed thing going. Okay, there's going to be somebody in here like that. And by the end of the morning, they're going to be like, whoo, I hope you brought your spiritual marshmallows because this preacher's on fire today. You know, you're going to be like, yeah, I want some of that. Give me some of that, all right? So somebody dared me to throw that in there, okay? Yeah. Somebody thought I couldn't work that into a sermon. Anyways, so listen, we've been looking at this letter to the Roman people, the Roman Christians, written by this guy named Paul. And if you're not familiar with Paul, Paul was the guy who kind of was responsible. Jesus gave him this mission to take the gospel news into all of the Mediterranean to the people that didn't have a whole lot of religious background. Okay, and so we've been looking at the letter to the Romans from Paul. And the first thing that we saw was that Paul urged us this. He said, there are some do's and some don'ts. These are some of the most important things about what you would do. He said, here's some don'ts and do's. He said, number one, don't offer God religion. Don't offer God religion. This isn't that kind of a God. He's not looking for religion. He's looking for something else. Don't offer him religion. If you really believe that God actually sent his son to actually die for your sake, because without it, you would be in a whole lot of trouble, okay? Don't just offer some fraction of yourself that you think that he should be satisfied with. Don't just offer him some percentage of yourself that you think should keep him happy, keep him at bay. Offer him your whole self. Religion, remember what religion is, we talked about this, is constantly trying to walk this tightrope of giving God just enough. Just enough. Religion's always tallying things, taking up numbers. How many times have I? How much have I given? Why? Because it's asking how much is enough, because I don't want to give too much if I don't have to. That's the only reason you would ask. How much have I given so far? Because you don't want to give too much. Because you don't, here's the ugly truth, you don't really want to give anything. Love is different. Love is very, very different. Love asks this question, where am I holding back? If you love someone, you're always asking, where am I holding back? Because you want to give them everything. You think that they deserve what you are and what you have. Then Pastor Mike just last week gave us a big do. He said, in light of this, he said, take inventory of what God has given you. You see, when you believe The idea, Paul believed it, I believe it, many, many people believe it, is that when you believe and you put your faith in Christ, he actually gives you something of yourself that is more than yourself. It's more than what you had before. There's some power to transform, some power to cause people to believe. There's power that is given to you. It is more than what you had before. And here's the thing, it's not just for you. It's actually put in you for you and everybody else. So take stock, take inventory of what he's given to you so that you can use it. But today, oh, this is exciting today. You never believe this. We get to talk about opinions. Isn't that fun? Opinions. And it's so strange. You're reading through this letter that Paul wrote, and it's a great letter. It's awesome because it's written for people that are new to faith, that don't have a ton of background, maybe. Maybe some do, maybe some don't. But if you took this letter and all you had was this letter, you would have a pretty good idea of what exactly Jesus is looking for. You'd have a pretty good understanding of the gospel. It's a little thick, and I understand sometimes it's a little hard to pick apart what's really in this letter, but that's the way it was written, so that a person has a chance. If all they had was this letter, they could get what they needed, at least to start with. And so in this letter, there's this whole, what we call a chapter now, okay, this whole chapter dedicated to opinions. Weird. And it starts out like this. This is chapter 14, Romans 14. He says, "Now accept the one who is weak in faith." Except the one who is weak in faith, but not for the purpose of passing judgment on his opinions. Except the one who is weak in faith, but not for the purpose of passing judgment on his opinions. Weak in faith, what in the world is that? Well, it just means that maybe your faith isn't terribly strong yet. Maybe you've known someone like this. Maybe this is you yourself right now. Maybe your faith in Jesus is kind of like it's a little bit, but it's not a whole lot of bit. Maybe there's a little bit of spark there. Maybe you're just getting started. Maybe it used to be strong, but maybe your faith, your heart has some bullet holes in it from some things that have happened. Maybe some circumstances have changed for you and things have been bad or hard. Or maybe some church people have kind of shot you through a few too many times and you're kind of wounded and you're not so sure how much you can trust Jesus because you're not sure how much you can trust his Jesus people. Okay? There are lots of people in the world that are feeling weak in faith, and I'm not asking you to self-identify, but whenever you bring the gospel into a place, whenever you start heating things up a little bit, you find pretty quick that there are people that have a little bit of faith in Jesus, but maybe not as much as they should have. Maybe they're thinking, or the theology's got a little bit of flaw in it. Maybe it's just not too strong. And Paul says, if you know someone like this, if you know someone who's got weakness in their faith, he said, what does he ask them to do? He says, accept them. He says, accept them. Some versions say, welcome. Some of your translations say, welcome that person in. Bring them in. Reel them in. Hug them, okay? Maybe they're uncomfortable with hugging, okay? But bring them in. Make your casa their casa. That's the best Spanish I have. Make your casa their casa. Love that person. Make them a part. Let them feel that they are a part of your family. Accept that person in. But he's careful. He says, but not for the purpose of passing judgment on his opinions. What? Who would even do that? Who would even do that? You know what passing judgment on someone's opinions is? Right? Maybe you don't. Passing judgment is when you take something that you see in another person, so you see that they believe a certain thing, you see that they maybe think that God is honored by something or dishonored by something, and you see that in them, and you say, that's a shame. And you write that person off. That's what passing judgment is all about. You take in, you behold something in another person, and you do a quick calculation, and you sum up the value of that person in a moment's time, and you either it's either good or it's bad. And I'm guessing most of the time it was bad, right? I mean, isn't that what you've experienced? Now, let me ask you this. Who here, by show of hands, believes that they have experienced someone passing judgment on them based on their opinions? The rest of you are lying. Or you weren't aware that it was happening. Okay. Either you're lying or you weren't aware. I'm actually thinking you weren't lying. Maybe you weren't aware. But here's the thing. It happens all the time. And it's not just a Christianity thing. It's an everyday thing. It's an everybody thing. It's a human thing to pass judgment on people based on the convictions that they hold or don't hold, but you think they should hold. Okay? And Paul is saying, listen, welcome in people if they have weakness in their faith. Welcome them in, and listen, don't do it just so that you can go, oh, really? You think that? I can't believe you think that. You know, I'm not even sure if we can really hang. Seems silly, right? I mean, you hear this, right? It just seems something bad about that, right? Seems something. Nah, that's nasty. We don't want to do that. But he says it, and he says it for a reason, because it was a problem. It was a problem. See, people have opinions, right? You know this. You don't have to be a Christian to know this. People have opinions. And most people have opinions about everything, but most people also have a few opinions about some things that are very, very strong. Right? Right? And maybe at some point you've experienced what it's like when someone beholds something about you, sees something you do, or hears something you say, and then they kind of sum up the rest of your life based upon that one thing. It's ugly, isn't it? It's ugly. And maybe you had a conviction at some point about what's okay to wear, and maybe it's about what's okay to wear at church or other places, or what shouldn't be worn, or maybe it was the jokes that you choose to laugh at or don't laugh at, or maybe it was your politics. Somebody heard that you voted Democrat. Somebody heard you voted Republican. Somebody heard you don't vote. Oops, just got political. Somebody heard about your approach to raising your kids, or how you think you ought to let your kids watch some movies and shows and games and things, but not others. Or maybe you're strict, or maybe you're too strict, or maybe somebody heard that you watch and listen to certain kinds of things. Maybe somebody recognized that you have a certain opinion about worship music, or what kind of music should be in church, or what shouldn't be in church, or how much money people should have, and how much money should people give, and how much, jeepers, how much should the pastor make, and, you know, is it okay for a pastor to live in a mansion? I'm fine with a pastor living in a mansion. I'm just kidding. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. So maybe you thought it was the kind of work that you do, and that it's okay or that it's not okay. And you have here's the thing, you have a conviction about just about everything, and sometimes you have a really strong one when it comes to how you view honoring the Lord. That's where opinions get really, really strong. God is honored when I do this. God is dishonored when I do this. Some of those things are very obvious because we have, you know, tons and tons and tons of years of God actually explaining, you know, right relationships between human beings and what love is and all that kind of stuff. But some things are kind of disputable. And the thing about Jesus is when he comes along, He brings a lot of freedom from a lot of rules and regs, okay? He brings a lot of freedom from a lot of rules and regulations, but people struggle. People struggle with opinions, and they're pretty brutal to each other, okay? And you got to ask, you know, what in the world could make a person do that to another person? I mean, in the name of Jesus and the church, I mean, it could happen other places, but you would think it wouldn't happen in the church, right? What in the world could make a person do that? Well, for starters, a ham sandwich. A ham sandwich could cause severe judgment. Severe judgment. People would be writing each other off over a ham sandwich. Now, you don't maybe know this, maybe you do, but many of the people that heard and accepted the gospel were Jewish. And so they had been raised Jewish their entire lives, which means absolutely, positively, no ham sandwich. None. It'd be like, if you asked a Jewish person, "Is it okay, you want to come over to my house and we'll have some ribs and we'll have some pork, you know, we'll put the pig on the spit." That'd sort of be like asking them if it's acceptable to come to church naked. Okay? The answer is no. No. And I'm you sitting here, I guarantee you've never even thought about that very much. Okay, should I come to church naked? No, because it's part of your social conventions, right? It's just understood. It's been practiced so many years. When you come, you modest, you wear clothes. I mean, maybe some of you aren't into that, but listen, that's just understood because it's in your background. And for them it was impossible to imagine that with Jesus, even though they understood what Jesus was about and they believed that he was their Savior, they just couldn't get around some ideas that they had. I can't imagine ever coming to meat and eating pork. And there were other kinds of food they couldn't eat too. It wasn't just pork. It was different kinds of seafood, all kinds of things they couldn't do. And there were people who thought that, well, you know, Jesus loves me every day. I serve Jesus every day. I don't have to just go certain places on Saturday, the Sabbath. You know, we could do good anytime. Jewish people struggled with that. They really, really couldn't get their mind around doing anything on Saturday because they had these strict rules and regulations their whole life. You don't do this. You don't do this. You don't do this. You do this, but definitely not that. And so they struggled. And so you have this hodgepodge. You have this mix. You have people that have a very, very definite religious background. You have people that have almost no religious background. Or their religious background is all kinds of religions all mixed together. So they don't really have a whole lot of preconceived notions. And so anything goes for them. And so this is what Paul says about all this. He doesn't wade into who's right and wrong. He doesn't. He doesn't get into that mess. Who's right about the Saturdays? Who's right about what you eat? Who's right about what you wear? Who's right about what you can participate in or not? He doesn't even wade into it. This is his priority right here. He says this: one person has faith that he may eat all things, but he who is weak, that's in faith, he who is weak eats vegetables only. In other words, that person doesn't really quite trust that this Jesus thing is more than religion. Enough to leave that go, okay? They're still kind of hung up on some old thing. He said that he who is weak eats vegetables only. The one who eats is not to regard with contempt the one who does not eat. And the one who does not eat is not to judge the one who eats. For God has accepted him. Threw that one in there. God has accepted him. Sounds logical, right? He's basically saying, nobody judge anybody, right? No matter what your conviction is about what honors God or what does, nobody be judging anybody. You can disagree, maybe you can talk, you can discuss, he said, but if you have gotten to a place where you are judging someone, where you are actually feeling very badly about that person and beginning to write them off in your heart, he says, stop. Stop. Don't do that. Because here's the thing. For God has accepted that person. Now, how can he say that? Well, if you go back a little bit, you understand that the person, what we're talking about here, the person that he's talking about has a conviction that they need to honor Jesus by doing something or not doing something. Maybe different than your conviction, but that person has a conviction that they are honoring Jesus by doing what they're doing. Now, whether they're a little skewed or a little off one way or the other, the fact remains that that person has faith in Jesus. Therefore, God has accepted him. And if God has accepted him, if God has accepted him, and you're writing him off, it means you have a higher standard than God does. Yeah. Yeah. It feels like a spanking, doesn't it? I'm sorry. It's just what's in there, right? But it's important. It's important. And so he's basically saying, look, your opinion about their opinion is pretty much irrelevant. I mean, you could discuss it and talk about it, and maybe you guys, you know, learn from each other and that cool stuff. But if you're getting to the point where you're actually feeling like it's personal, you need to stop. You need to stop right there, because you're getting into someone's responsibility that isn't your responsibility. You're judging someone. Of course, that's not really your job, is it? And he says, well, listen, backtrack for a second. Watch, see, it's easy to hear about this stuff and go, yeah, it's a ham sandwich. That's dumb, right? Well, how could you have that kind of a wall built up between two people that both believe in the same Jesus, and you're like skewering each other with your opinions? How can you do that? But let me ask you this. Instead of the ham sandwich, okay, instead of the food thing, rather than food, I want you to think about the thing that you have a strong opinion about. Something you feel, yes, God wants this for me. God thinks this is right. Maybe you have an opinion that's like that about gun control. Maybe you have an opinion about that that's like, you should vote Republican always if you're a Christian, no matter what. Or if you're Christian, you should always vote, or you shouldn't vote. Or maybe you have some kind of an opinion about child raising that's just, man, that's the truth. It's like it's so strong in you, okay? Something you feel passionately about. Something that's hard for you not to take personally. I don't know what that thing is for you. I don't. And I could rattle off a list of about 8 million things. I still wouldn't cover them all. But there's something. Everybody's got a something. And insert that thing. Is it worship styles? Is it what's appropriate to do with your money? Is it political? What is it? Insert that thing in there and imagine a person who totally, flatly thinks that it's not important. Not important. Nah, it's not important. That's silly. It's not important. In fact, maybe I'll promote the opposite. Right? If that thing is burning away at you, if that's a strong opinion, okay, it's difficult. It's difficult to read that last verse, isn't it? The one who eats, just fill in the blank with the one who does the thing that you don't like. Okay, the one who eats is not to regard with contempt. The one who does not eat, and the one who does not eat, fill in the blank with the thing that you can't stand, okay, is not to judge the one who eats, for God has accepted him. It's almost painful. It's almost painful, the stronger that opinion is, to read that God has accepted that person, because in a person's heart, just naturally in there, is this thought that if a person disagrees with something that's as important as I think that thing is, they ought to be punished. They deserve something. They don't deserve to have God accept them. There's that nasty thing, that monster in there that says, no, if they disagree with that, I mean, I don't care about the songs, I don't care about this, but if they vote for that person, I don't even think they're a Christian. How can they be a Christian if they vote for that person? How could they be a Christian? How can they call themselves a Christian if they support that movement? How could they be a Christian if they actually think that? There's something ugly in there. Something really, really ugly. It's not just a Christian thing. It's a human thing. We already had it before Jesus. Already had it. Something ugly about that. That feeling that you get when someone approaches you and just totally flatly dismisses something that you think is outrageously important. There's a name for that thing. We've just read it, but I'll give it to you again. There's a name for that thing. It's called contempt. It's called contempt. Some define that as the feeling, the sensation inside, that a person or a thing is beneath consideration, worthless, or deserving scorn. Yeah, deserving scorn. Yeah, if that person gets something bad, you know what? They got it coming to them, because, yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with them getting whatever they got coming. I'm fine with God being displeased. I think he should be displeased with that person. It's ugly. Nobody wants to think that that's inside of them. And you can tell when it's coming. You can tell when it's coming, right? You get a few little red flags. You get that, you know, they get that unsettled feeling in your gut. You know, the steam is starting to come up through your pipes. You know, it's starting to come out in the nostrils. You know, and you're starting to feel a little, almost like a little sick inside, a little twisted, a little upset. A little upset. Irritation. Get some irritation about that person. Maybe even angry. Maybe you say something or maybe you don't. Maybe it comes out verbally, or maybe it comes out and how it doesn't come out, and how you react to that person from then on, how you avoid that person, how you don't invite that person to anything anymore, how you don't talk to that person, how you try and avoid them whenever they're around. You know, has anybody ever done that to you? Even when people have, we think we're so slick, okay? We think we're so slick. We can judge somebody in our heart and think, well, I didn't say anything out loud, so they can't tell the difference. You can tell, can't you? You can tell. You know when somebody's judged you, don't you? You can tell by the way the things they say, the things they don't say, how they change their demeanor when they're around you, when their personality changes and it only changes for you. You can tell. You're not stupid. You can tell. And it's ugly when you see it, and it's ugly when you recognize it inside. And Paul says, it doesn't have a place in the church. It doesn't have a place in the church. And if you feel, whenever you feel, and you will feel it, okay, you will feel it, because why? Because you're a human, okay, and you naturally gravitate to have feelings of contempt for people that disagree with things that you think are really important, that you hold as personal convictions of yours. You'll feel that thing rise up. It's going to happen. But Paul says, if you're feeling that, when you are feeling that, this is the question that you should ask. In verse 14:4, he says, who are you to judge the servant of another? Now, that's a rhetorical question. If you just look at it logically, who am I to judge the servant of somebody else? Well, I'm not somebody else, so therefore that person is not my servant, right? I mean, you just kind of work backwards. Obviously, I'm not the person's master. It's just a question. Who are you? Oh, who am I? I'm not that person's master. That's who I am. It's more about who you're not. You're not the person's master. They don't report to you, okay? And he goes on. He says, to his own master. This is 14:4. It says, to his own master he stands or falls, and he will stand, for the Lord is able to make him stand. So you got this person who's put their faith in Jesus, and they've got different ideas about how you honor Jesus than you do. Maybe some of them are wrong. Actually, probably you're both wrong about a bunch of things. Let's just be fair. Right? You're both probably wrong about a bunch of things somewhere in life. Okay? That's just how it is, because we're just not that good. He says, when it comes to those things, if there's weakness, if there's wrongness, if there's error, Jesus can work that. Jesus can fix that. That's Jesus' responsibility, and he is going to make him stand. He's going to cause that person to be able to be upright before God and be able to stand and not cower in fear. Because why? Because the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross has made it possible for him to stand in God and not be concerned about condemnation. He's put his faith in. Maybe it's not the exact faith you think they ought to have, but it is faith. It gets better. He doesn't stop. Paul doesn't usually just stop, right? Okay, he says this, verse 10. He goes on to say, but you, why do you judge your brother? Same thing again, right? Why do you judge your brother? You don't have. Why would anybody judge their own brother? Who's supposed to judge your brother? Dad, right? You know, were you ever a kid? and you really seriously thought, man, I need to punish my sibling. You know, they need a spanking. They need a something. And you kind of took that upon yourself. And then, of course, your parents found out about it. And were they happy? No, they're not happy. Why? Because that's not your job. Sometimes we feel like it's our job. Because we've taken whatever it is we think is a sin of theirs personally. He says, for we will all, or you again, why do you regard your brother with contempt? Another rhetorical question. And then he goes on to say, for we will all stand before the judgment seat of God. For we will all stand where? Where in regards to the judgment seat of God will we stand? On top of it? Will we stand behind it? No. He says, we will all stand individually in front of it. There'll be a line. A long line. And everybody's filing through that same line. Ain't nobody gets to sit in the seat. It's not your seat. Nobody gets to stand behind the seat. Everybody's going to stand in front of it. And who's going to sit in it? God's going to sit in it. Dad. That's Dad's chair. The judgment seat is Dad's chair. You don't sit there. And he goes on to say, this is his proof in a way. He says, for it is written, as I live, says the Lord, every knee shall bow to who? Me. And every tongue shall give praise to God. I'm God. I'm the boss. I'm the boss. That's God's thing. And this line is beautiful in a way. I mean, if you're not uncomfortable already, I'm uncomfortable. Okay, I'm as guilty of this as anybody, okay, at different times in my life. He says then, so then, since God is God, and that's God's chair, and that's God's job, and you're not Dad, only Dad is Dad. He said, so then, verse 12, so then each one of us will give an account of himself to God. And by default, what that means is, you won't be giving account of anybody else to God. It's, in a way, it's every man for himself. When it comes to your accountability to God, you will be giving an account of yourself to God. You're not responsible when you're, can you imagine this? There's God's judgment seat, there's God in it, and it, you wait, next guy, and then God's sitting there like, all right, buddy, let's review your life. And you're just like, wait, before we get to that part, wait. What? Look, so I got this problem with this other guy. Did you see what, I think I saw him way back there at the back of the line. He's not up here yet, okay, but you should know, before he gets here, he did this, and he thinks this, and can I just sit up here with you and wait till he gets here so I can kind of help you sort things out? Not gonna happen. Paul's saying to us, look, guys, don't forget how this whole thing works. Do not forget how this whole thing works. Nobody, listen, how many people are accountable to you? Goose egg. Nobody's accountable to you for their convictions before God. Nobody's accountable to you. If somebody stubs your toe, yeah, they're accountable to you. If somebody steals from you, yeah, they're accountable to you. You know, if somebody takes something of yours, yeah, they're accountable to you. But they're not accountable to you for their convictions of what's sin and what isn't sin before God. That's a one-way thing right there. That belongs to Him to determine. And yeah, you can help people. You can help point the way, and you can help define what you've understand. You can share your experience. But at the end of the day, it's not personal to you. It's personal to Him. You don't get to take it personally. You don't get to take it personally. So then, each one of us will give an account of himself to God. Nobody's going to be giving an account of themselves to you. Not going to do it. So So what do you do? What do you do? What do you do? Because people are going to have their opinions, right? And it's going to make you crazy. I mean, you're going to disagree. You're going to spot stuff right away, right out of the blue. They can't do that in church. They can't do that in their life. They can't raise their kids that way. I would never do that. I would feel guilty. I would feel terrible. What are you going to do when that happens? He says this. Therefore, verse 13, therefore, let us not judge one another anymore. Let's not do that anymore. But rather, determine this. He goes on. Instead of that, he says, let's determine this. Let's decide to do this. Not to put an obstacle or a stumbling block in a brother's way. You see, at the end of the day, if you love Jesus, then your goals, your priorities become more and more like his, right? And I can tell you right now, without a shadow of a doubt, Jesus' greatest priority is to see the greatest number of people actually put their faith in him. That's it. That's his big priority. To see the greatest number of people put their genuine, actual, real faith in him, in his ability to save them, in his ability to forgive their sins, and his ability to transform them. He said, if that's the priority, then we should purpose and decide intentionally to make sure that no matter what, we're always helping people get closer and trust God more and not helping them away. He said, whatever we do, whatever it is we choose to do in our life, we need to make sure that we're helping people get closer to faith in Christ, not farther away. Don't put an obstacle in front of somebody on their way to trust. If you see somebody who's a little weak in faith and they come in and sure, they got all these kind of weird convictions and you don't think they make a lot of sense. He says, don't hammer that person with all of your judgment. That's the last thing in the world they need. What do they need? They need you to help clear a path. Help them clear a path. Help them. Embrace them. Nothing hurts a person's faith worse than having people pass judgment upon you for the convictions that you have at any point. And you're like, nothing does a better job of ruining people, of filling their heart full of bullet holes and asking them to question, can I trust Jesus? You don't want to do that. He says, let's help ourselves. Let's keep ourselves accountable to help people's faith get stronger. That has to always be the bottom line. And he writes this, for if because of food, your brother is hurt, you are no longer walking according to love. I want you to stop there and just do something, a little exercise. Instead of food in that verse, I want you to insert the thing, your thing. I know you got a thing you feel strongly about, a thing you feel passionately about. And it's not really the gospel itself. It's just kind of like one of those subset things. You know, church ought to be this way, or people ought to be this way, or Christian parents ought to act this way, or, you know, just take that thing that you feel strongly and passionately about and put it in there instead of food. Do not destroy with your politics. Oh, I'm sorry, I've jumped ahead a little bit. But he says, do not destroy with your food him for who Christ died. And just do the same thing here in this line. Do not destroy with your, is it politics? Do not destroy with your convictions about child raising. Do not destroy with your convictions about worship and the right way to praise. And do not destroy with your music selection or your ideas. Just don't destroy someone for who Christ died over those things. Don't wreck their faith over your conviction about how things ought to be. Don't do that. See, what he's saying there, in so many words, is that if your passion for honoring God is wounding people's faith, you're doing it wrong. If your passion for honoring Jesus Christ is causing you to injure people as they're trying to build their faith, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. He says, this person is a person for who Christ died. That's a tough little nudge, isn't it? Don't destroy with your thing, whatever that thing is. Put it on the scale. Don't destroy with your thing, on this side of the scale, a person for who Christ died. Christ died for this person. Christ suffered for this person. Christ did everything, gave everything that he was and everything that was him. He gave it for that person. And you're willing to sacrifice Jesus' sacrifice to be right. There's nothing that's worth that. See, there are things that we have opinions about that really aren't important, right? You know, like which football team's awesome, which one's not, who's going to the playoff. You know, I know some of you would disagree. Surprise, surprise. You know, the Yankees don't deserve to win. Like, there's some things we have strong opinions about that just really, really don't matter. And then there are things that we have strong opinions about that matter a little more, right? You know, is it wise to borrow money? Is it wise to do this thing? Is it wise to, you know, give? And then there are things that we have opinions about that are issues that really actually seem to make an impact. You know, who becomes the next president? Who takes over? Who's going to be the next high guy in charge? Okay, how do you handle your marriage? You know, there's lots of things that really, yeah, that's pretty important. That's going to make a serious impact. And then there are things that seem insanely important. Just insanely important. I can't identify those for you. You know, how do I raise my kids? What happens with them? How do I handle my marriage? How do practice my spiritual gifts? How do I do this for Jesus? You know, there's all these things that seem just like, wow, that's like way, way, way up there, right? It's going to make a big impact. But here's the thing. Then there's the gospel. And that's above all the rest. The most important thing that you can think of that you have a strong opinion about pales in comparison to the actual message of the gospel. And believe it or not, our strongest opinions are not the gospel. It's hard. It's hard. I mean, when you feel strong about something, you feel strong about it. It's hard not to make that the focus of your day, you know? You feel strongly about it. But at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, okay, is that as important as the gospel? Because if it's not, then you can't take it personally when people don't jump on board with your bandwagon, things that you think are important. It's not the same as the gospel. And I think it begs the question, when we feel strongly about things, just how strong do we come off? Just how strong are we coming off? Do we talk about those things like they are the gospel? Where'd that phrase even come from, right? You talk about people that talk about things as though they're the gospel. Okay, that's been going on a long time. How do you talk about the things that you have convictions about? Are you passing judgment and passing? Have you ever seen that? Passing judgment and passing. It's as though you don't even realize you're passing judgment, and you're just kind of like, yeah, anybody believes that's the stupidest person in the world, blah, 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 blah. You know, anybody who votes for that person's a moron, blah, 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 blah. You know, how do you talk about the things that matter to you? What's the sense that people get from you? What's it like to be on the other side of you? Let me ask this question again. How many of you feel as though somebody, could be church or otherwise, has passed judgment upon you at some point in your life? Show of hands. Come on. Participate. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, okay. How many of you, this is the second question, how many of you remember the last time you really passed judgment on someone and they knew it? It's a smaller number. It's kind of ironic. Just, my point is, most of the time, we don't even realize we're doing it. We don't even realize the effect that we can have based on the way we talk about things, the things that we insinuate from the way that we behave and the way that we talk and the things we put on social media. We don't even think about it enough. What's it like to be on the other side of you? See, I want to leave you with this, okay? Because I don't want anybody to miss. I don't want to miss anything, okay? I want to say this very, very clearly. If you haven't listened to me the whole time, just listen now for like 5 seconds, and then you can check out again, okay? Okay? If you are framing your convictions up with the same importance that you frame up the gospel in your life, you're probably causing some collateral damage somewhere. You're probably causing some collateral damage somewhere. And here's the thing. When you do that, if you recognize that you do that, we all have the... Here, newsflash, we can all do that. We can all do it. We can all do that. When you recognize that thing, you have to ask yourself, okay, is this disagreement becoming contempt? Is it just a disagreement, or is it becoming anger? Is it becoming ridicule in my heart? Is it becoming me just laughing at another person's existence? Is it me summing up the whole of another person and say, you know what, maybe the church would really just be better off without that person in it? You may not say it out loud, but sometimes it's how it comes out. Maybe the world would be better off without that person's life in it. If they're going to think that way, then we would just be better off without them. It comes out whether we want to know or not. And I'm telling you, when you recognize that sensation of irritation with someone who disagrees about your conviction, when you recognize that sense of ridicule and not taking that person seriously anymore, not considering them to be valuable anymore, their input's no longer anything to you. When you recognize that sensation, I want to tell you this very, very clearly. We are climbing into a chair that does not belong to us. We are beginning to take the steps. When that feeling is rushing up in us, we're beginning to climb into the judgment seat, and it's not ours to sit in. We can't take people's disagreement personally. You can't, because it's not yours to take personally. It's his. It's his. So I just invite you to ask a couple of questions. For the rest of your life, for the rest of your life, ask these a couple of questions, okay? A couple of questions, okay? When you recognize that thing, ask yourself, when you recognize the discomfort that you're getting in your heart, when you realize someone really disagrees with something you think is important, when you recognize that, ask yourself, what is that sensation? Is that contempt? Is that contempt? And I hope that that would lead you to this last question. And I'm going to put it like this so you can put it in your pocket and take it home, okay? Whose chair is whose? Whose chair is whose? Is the judgment seat your chair? Or is it somebody else's? Just put that in your pocket and take it home. Whose chair is whose? Where do I stand in line? All right, I'm going to leave it right there. Next week, we're going to get into something that is going to be good for you, especially if you've ever wondered how those crazy Christians could be so stinking crazy. What in the world makes them tick? Now, most of you, I know, are crazy Christians. I understand there's a lot of crazy Christians in here, but there are some who aren't. I would invite you to come back next week because I'm going to share a secret with you from Paul. Right now, I just want to pray with you before I leave, because honestly, a message like this feels kind of like it's a spanking to somebody. Listen, I'm not spanking anybody, okay? I'm just trying to draw your attention to something that Paul thought was epically important for all of Christianity. It's a must. It's a must. If you're going to be a Christian, put your faith in Jesus, you've got to file this away in your head someplace. You got to file this away in your heart. Because it's going to come up again and again and again and again. All right, so let me pray for you. And we're going to let you guys go and eat food in the back. There's all kinds of lunch for everybody back there. Lord, I just ask that you would do with this message what I can't. You would take this message and you would bring the truth out, flesh the truth out.